It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is Mrs. LaGreca, Don's mom. Time for Michael K. Show with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg, 98.7 ESPN.
And we're Kalis, at least to start. Exhibition season underway for the Yankees. They are up 4-0 on the Phillies. When that game is over, we'll be joined by Yes and Michael K. So it's Don and Peter steering the ship on a Monday. What's up, Peter? How you doing, man?
Don, hi.
Now, how does somebody come back? I can just picture when you come back from a bachelor party in Vermont, right?
Right.
It's like that walk of shame, the male version of the walk of shame, right?
Oh, yeah.
Your shirt's torn. You know, the beard is all disheveled. You know, your fly might even be open. I don't know, but you come back from Vermont after a huge weekend.
Oh.
God, the stories just must be bubbling over.
Yeah. Well, Don, how do I say this? We didn't do anything.
Okay.
I mean anything.
Kind of like the Yankees.
We watched a lot of basketball. Oh, yeah. Ate an obscene amount of food. Just an obscene amount of food. I was in way too close proximity to Ballard for 48 hours.
Right.
Like, you ever just, like, get really happy that you're in the place you're in life? Like, I had a moment where I realized how much I love going to sleep in my apartment with Natalie. It feels really, really nice. And I was thinking about that as Ballard was either clearing his throat, coughing or making some other bodily noise, I don't know, every 5 minutes for 8 hours.
Oh, no.
It was an unbelievable amount of just throat clearing, coughs. And I had one period where for about 40 minutes straight, my eyes would almost shut for me to go to sleep, and then a cough would wake me back up. Don, I barely survived. Oh. But it was fun. We had a great time, watched some great basketball. Ballard made some delicious burgers. All is well.
And, you know, St. Peter's, again, we're going to keep giving them love. We hope to get Coach back on again later in the week as they get prepared for the Sweet 16. And Andrew Gundling just made a great point during our Zoom meeting before the show, is that when you win in the first round, it's not the first 15 to win, but you win, you get to bask in it for like a day. Maybe not even a day if you're a coach, right? Because you got to get prepared for Murray State right away, and then you got to fly to go to your, you know, to the, or you got to just get ready for the next game, and you play, you know, 2 days later, right? They played on a Thursday, and then you're playing on Saturday night. But now, after getting the win on Saturday, they get to bask in the glory for 6 days, don't play again until Friday.
Right.
Like a full week, they were able to come home, got a little bit of celebration in Jersey City, and, you know, sleep in their own bed, celebrate with their parents and their friends, like, we're going to the Sweet 16, and then you kind of get ready for the next game and see where it goes. But even if it goes no further than this, Peter, what a tremendous story. People that, what, 3-4 days ago didn't even know that St. Peter's was in Jersey City. Now they're in the Sweet 16, and it should be a lot of fun.
It's one of the most fun Cinderella stories that I can remember. You know, maybe that's some bias just from it's a local story here. Don, I had as much fun rooting for St. Peter's as I've had rooting for college basketball in a very long time. First of all, I just got to give so much credit to Coach Holloway. Those dudes, I don't know if you watch most of the game, Don, they never looked like an underdog.
No.
They never played. You know, tournament games have such feel. We're all used to knowing what the first half feels like. You know, every sort of piece of the tournament game, especially when an underdog is playing a heavy favorite, we all know the feelings. You just never felt like you were watching an underdog play.
I'm so glad you said that. Now, you go to overtime in the first game against Kentucky. Now, obviously, that's dramatic, but when you saw how they handled that overtime, it wasn't a last-second shot. It wasn't a desperation heave. Like,
no.
They controlled the final seconds of that game and won. And then you look at the way that they wrapped things up against Murray State. They were in control. I mean, you might have been nervous just because it's a Cinderella story, but they were up 8-9 with like 2.5 minutes to go, and you know they were in control. And even the way that they, I don't want to say they didn't celebrate, but didn't it look like a team that expected to move on? Like when it was over, you just saw, all right, let's go, next up. You know, and that's all coaching. And unfortunately, you've got a brand new head coach there in Maryland that's going to open up the Seton Hall job for him to eventually leave, and that's what kind of stinks when you get these small schools that make runs. They lose their head coaches, but for now at least, they're one of the only 16 teams left in the nation, and it's a fabulous story.
It really is. It's what I'm psyched about. It's what's got me waiting for next weekend.
Yeah. No, it's been it's really made the tournament for me. And, you know, being a Jersey guy and kind of knowing a little bit about, like, St. Peter's, because we kind of joked about it last week about when you do updates for a living, you knew St. Peter's because you always updated their scores, whether it was Sports Phone, The Fan doing 2020s, or, you know, here on 98.7 ESPN New York. But to say that I, like, you know, spent a lot of time watching their games or never gone to a game, but to see this is a fabulous run. All right, so there's so much on the table to talk about. Rangers make a few deals. We'll talk about that later. They get Mott, they get Braun, they get Kopp. So they add some depth after having an amazing weekend sweeping against Tampa and a Carolina game that they pulled right out of your you-know-what, a game they did not deserve to win and won 2-0. Julius Randle's losing it, Peter. He's losing it. And I don't know if you can afford to keep him at this point. Like, how do you go into next year trying to build around this guy? There's a lot going on there, and none of it's good.
Yesterday was not what you want.
No, so
this is not what you want.
We got to talk about that, but you know we're going to begin because so much happened with the Yankees since the last time we talked to you. Correa goes to Minnesota with a 3-year contract with an opt-out for him over the next three, which could have been something the Yankees might have been able to do but chose not to. And Trevor Story goes to Boston. So two American League teams get better, but now a team in their own division gets better. And, you know, Yankee universe is up in arms because they needed a shortstop, and they didn't seem interested in either of the two shortstops until you start getting word that they more than kicked the tires on Story, that they had a conversation with Correa. So it really just comes down to, boy, this Volpe kid better be good, or Peraza better be good, because if these prospects don't pan out, Peter, boy, are the Yankees going to have egg on their face, because two of the best shortstops in baseball were free agents. Yankees have the money and chose to build a team around Volpe in the future, and if he or Peraza don't pan out, that's not going to look good for Yankee
Universe. I wonder if it's sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't with Correa, though. Like, do you really feel the fan base would have been thrilled with Correa? I think there's a solid amount of Yankee fans right. who would have been disgusted by it.
You know what? That's why we got the phone, right? 1-800-919-3776. None of you wanted him during the offseason. Didn't want to touch him with a 10-foot pole. He's a cheater, bad guy for the room. Don't want him. But now that he's gone. But now that he's gone and you didn't get Story, like, ask yourself now, all those people that didn't want him, can you honestly say now, with what they now have for this season, are you okay with that? Or would you have said, you know what, I probably would have rather held my nose and had Correa pay my shortstop
right.
for the next 3 years and hate his guts, hate watch him for the next 3 years, as opposed to this? I'd be really curious, because I think there were a lot of people that felt like there was a plan B. There were other directions that they can go. And even if they decided to go at Volpe at shortstop, that they would trade for Olsen. They didn't do that either. They brought back Rizzo. So I can't sit here and tell you the Yankees are that much better than they were last year. Boston might be better. Certainly the Blue Jays are better. The Rays are always hanging around. So I wonder how those Yankee fans feel, Peter. Do they wish that they had the chance to hold their nose and have Correa be their shortstop?
Right. It's a tough one. Because now you're sitting there looking around going, we didn't get Story or Correa. This is such a riff. I barely even know who we have. What is it? But in reality, if it had played out differently, would people have reacted that way? I don't know that we'll ever now fully know Don, but you're right. It's a lot of pressure to be proven right down the line.
And it's something I said over the last couple of weeks, Peter, and you agreed with me, is that it's really difficult for the fan base to trust what the Yankees have done here in the offseason because they don't trust the guy that's doing it, and Brian Cashman. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you you should or you shouldn't trust him, but clearly the fan base, judging by the calls and the tweets, do not trust Brian. But you're going to have to trust Brian on this one. You're going to have to trust that the prospects are going to pan out and that you have the next Derek Jeter right now in your system that's going to be your future shortstop, that Josh Donaldson's not going to get hurt, that Rizzo is going to work out at first base. You're going to have to trust it. And right now, I don't know if Yankee fans trust it. So certainly, at least judging by the reaction that I've seen on social media and from my friends that are Yankee fans, they're apoplectic right now. Like they can't believe with all the moves that they needed to make during the offseason that this is the team that they planned on building. Now, ultimately, you will see how they play. And if we fast forward, you know, July and August, this team is the first place team. It'll be all forgiven and forgotten. But right now, I don't get a sense the Yankee fans happy.
Well, listen, Don, when is a Yankee fan happy?
The parade.
I hope they lose.
They're happy for that, you know, however long that parade lasts.
When the parade ends, it's over anyway.
Then it's already, let's move on. Let's win the next championship. But they're kind of in a weird zone here. You know, this is kind of foreign territory. They have not won a championship since 2009. Now, that's laughable to a Met fan. That's certainly laughable to a Rays fan and to a lot of fans around Major League Baseball, a Brewers fan. They would love to have the last decade that the Yankees have had. Yankee fans don't want it. But, Peter, it's seeing teams. Like, it kind of appears like they were outmaneuvered by Minnesota, right? They got the Yankees to take the Donaldson salary. They went out and got the players that the Yankees didn't seem to want. They feel like they're set with this, and it allowed them to go out and sign Correa, who was obviously on the Yankees' radar at some point. And then you see what the Blue Jays have done, and you see what the Red Sox have done, and you see what the Rays do with a very minimal payroll. And it's like, well, I understand we've got the third or fourth highest payroll in baseball, but, you know, we don't – why are the Dodgers outspending us? Why are the Mets outspending us? You know, why are we having to make these types of moves when there were two great shortstops that were available just for money? And how do we know that Volpe and Peraza aren't going to turn out to be Clint Frazier or Bird? How do we know? They're obviously not ready right now. All right, phone's blowing up, 1-800-919-3776. Again, the lay of the land for you is that as soon as this Yankee game is over and they're in the bottom of the sixth right now, Yankees up 5-0, Michael will join us, and yes, we'll join us, but right now you'll join us at 1-800-919-3776. Let's start it off with David in the Bronx. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, David?
Hey, how you doing? Just wanted to say if Correa would have signed with the Yankees and performed, everybody would have forgotten what happened in 2017.
Thank you.
Just one more thing. You know, love the show, Pete. I listen to the morning show on Hot 97 every day.
Thank you, man.
And, you guys are great, all right? That's all.
Appreciate you, dude.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. He's so right. You know what? It would have been a thing for a few weeks, and certainly if he got off to a slow start, Peter, forget about it. But if the Yankees are winning and he's hitting, you fall in love with a guy because ultimately you want to win.
Correct.
You fall in love with Roger Clemens, you'll fall in love with Carlos Correa, believe me.
Of course.
And we've always said that.
Listen, I'm not saying people wouldn't have had the right to be at first kind of grossed out by it and a few boos the first time, but within 6 months, he's now your guy. And now you're fighting other people because they're talking about your guy.
Oh, and this whole thing about, well, how is he going to be in the same clubhouse with Aaron Judge after what Judge said about him stealing the MVP from him. Well, Donaldson and Cole are going to be in the same clubhouse. Yankees didn't stop them from getting Donaldson. That's overblown, too. Austin, Brooklyn, you're on ESPN New York.
How you guys doing, man? Thank you for taking the call. Hey, Don, you made a good point. I mean, I think the Yankees, I want to call it Korea. The only thing that made me skeptical about it might be the length of the contract because, you know, Aaron Judge is going to become a free agent. But to see what 3 years in option and opt-out after every year, I think that's something that you definitely have to take a look at.
Well, I guess the scary thing about that contract, Austin, and thank you for the phone call, but you were kind of cutting in and out, is that what if he has a monster year and opts in and he doesn't go anywhere and it does affect you bringing Aaron Judge back? But maybe you just sign him to the one-year deal. There was talk about that too, so that he can go on and get the monster deal for Scott Boras next year. So, hey, listen, if they wanted Carlos Correa, Peter, if they wanted Trevor Story, they would have gotten him. Yankees aren't going to get outbid for somebody that they want. And most Yankee fans aren't sitting there with a calculator. Okay, how close are they to the threshold? And they just want to see the team get better. And can you honestly say right now, Peter, that this team is that much better than last year's team?
No.
No, they might be. They might very well be. They might go out there and win 110 games and win the championship. But, you know, right now I think Yankee fans really feeling like last year was a colossal disappointment, that there was going to be major, major changes. And there were changes. But if anything, they were marginal improvements. And there's a lot of other teams that say they made, listen, Minnesota reconstructed their team. Now, we'll see if it works or not, and they never beat the Yankees on a bet. But and not that you have to worry about Minnesota during the regular season, but maybe in the postseason. But worry about the Blue Jays, worry about the Rays, worry about the Red Sox. And I think the Yankees can hang. I mean, listen, the Yankees aren't a bad team. And I think the Yankees are going to do very well. It's just that I think Yankee fans just expected a lot more. Paul in Saratoga, you're on ESPN New York. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Love you both. I think the Yankees had two clear paths to success this offseason, and they took neither one. The first would be to take all these amazing, wonderful, crazy prospects we have, including Volpe the Anointed, and throw them at the A's for Chapman, Olsen, and one of those pitchers, and we'd all sit back and collect championships and then reboot the system. They didn't do that. So then they had the opportunity to spend money wisely on Correa short term, on Freeman, and what would we be saying if we today had a infield of Urshela and Correa and Torres and Freeman for the next 5 years? We would be thrilled. So I just think they've lost their way. They're sort of neither fish nor fowl, and I don't think they know what they're doing.
Well, I'm going to take not knowing what they're doing off the table, Paul. It's that they're going about it a different way than everybody else, and I do think sometimes there's this little bit of Brian wants to think outside the box. He kind of wants to show you that he's the smartest guy in the room, and they certainly believe that Volpe or Peraza are going to be the next Derek Jeter. And if he's right, then you're going to be very happy they didn't make these moves, because they're going to flourish here and maybe be part of a core four down the road with Judge, and then maybe it'll be Volpe and it'll be Torres, and you'll have something like that. But what if these guys turn out to be the next Frazier or Bird? And
exactly.
I always think, Paul, a bird in a hand, right? That's what you're looking at. When you go out and you sign a free agent, you give up the money, they play to the back of the baseball card. I got that going for me. I have no idea. You know how many times, Paul, Mets and Yankees have given you highly touted prospects and the guys turn out to be nothing?
100%. And Cashman loves his prospects. But let's say Volpe and Peraza turn out to be great. One of them can play second, the other one can play third, and we'll have Correa and Freeman at short and first. What would be wrong with that?
Well, the one thing I will bail them out on, Freeman, and thank you for the call, Paul, is that maybe he never wanted to come here. And I can't say you can't spend like a drunken sailor. There's a lot of money to give a guy that is going to be in his late 30s when the contract is up. So let's leave Freeman off the table. And I understand that Story splits, Peter, are not great outside of Coors Field. So maybe he's a product of Coors Field. Maybe you're scared off by him. But they did talk to him. They were interested. If you listen to the reports, that they were in on Story until the bitter end. And those splits, let's not forget, in the National League West, you're playing your games at Coors Field in Arizona, sure. But, you know, the Dodger Stadium isn't exactly a home run friendly ballpark, and neither is San Francisco. Now he's going to be playing in a division where Yankee Stadium gives up a lot of home runs. His home games are going to be at Fenway Park. A lot of home runs to be had in Toronto. A lot of home runs to be had in Baltimore. I think Trevor Story, Peter, is going to do just fine in Boston. Just fine.
And listen,
whether or not the Yankees were to get Correa, Story, we'd all be sitting here having the same conversation about, well, show me something. My point is, until the season starts, you don't know what you're looking at anyway, and we know the default position of the Yankee fan is to complain until there's reason to celebrate. So, I'm sure there are people who are going to complain about Correa, but Don, 50% of them, or Story, 50% of them would have complained if they'd made the move, at least.
Right.
So, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. What you need to see now is if the guys you're betting on will pan out.
I understand.
But they do get it right often, too.
You are going to be talking about the complainers, and the complainers are going to say, why would you bring in a cheater? Why would you bring in a guy that's a product of Coors Field? Why would you bring in a guy that you're going to be spending a ton of money to when he's 37, 38 years old? But at least in the interim, you know what you're going to get. And you're leaving the door open for prospects that you don't know what you're going to get. And the fan base is like, well, are these the prospects? Is this going to be Clint Frazier all over again? Is this going to be Bird all over again? The guys that you told us were going to be gods? Sanchez. You know, Sanchez was supposed to be the second coming of Thurman Munson, and we held on to him, and you apologized for him, and he framed pitches better than everybody else. Well, what ended up happening to him? So when you really look at the prospects outside of Aaron Judge, how many of them are really panned out? That's what's scaring a Yankee fan right now. What if Volpe and Peraza turn out to be Bird, Frazier, Sanchez? Right now, Torres isn't looking very good, right? Coming off a tough year.
We just double down and bank on Dominguez being Babe Ruth. Now, back to the Trevor Story splits. If you do want to look at that, Don, home for his career, he has 375 games. He has 370 road games. His average at home, 303 to 241 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
His OPS, 972 at home, 752 on the road. 95 home runs at home, 63 on the road, and his RBI is 279 at home, 171 on the road.
No, there's a big difference, as it is for a lot of players that come out of Coors Field. But he's also going to a home run friendly park at Fenway. He'll play in a home run friendly park in pretty much every building in the American League East, where you're going to be playing a lot of your games. Listen, will he be what he was in Colorado? It didn't seem to scare a lot of teams off from wanting to give him big money, so... Hey, you're so right, Peter. Everybody's going to find something to complain about. But a bird in a hand, man, I know what these guys can do. I can pan them out. And if Volpe turns out to be Derek Jeter, we're going to be applauding Brian Cashman for doing the right thing. And that's what it really comes down to. And let's not forget, too, the pressure that's going to be on this kid when he gets called up. Because he's not just going to have the weight of having to try to be a great player, but the weight of all the players that they could have had that they didn't get because of him. So we'll see how he handles that. 1-800-919-3776. Rangers making some moves. Knicks falling out of it. NCAA tournament. It is a busy, busy time. And we're not even through March. And we're only 20 minutes into the show. Michael will join us eventually as soon as the Yankee game is over. How are we doing, Peter? All right?
I mean, I think so far, so good. I mean, there's a lot to get to. The football, the carousel of quarterbacks in the NFL is unbelievable this offseason.
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
Right.
Matt Ryan to Indianapolis was just obvious. Now where does Baker Mayfield go? Does he go to Seattle? Does he go to Atlanta?
And while it is obvious, Don, I would just contend it's rare that an off-season of change delivers this much. There really has been a lot of change. And, in fact, even the people who stayed put are interesting, Rodgers and Brady. So it has been a pretty eventful off-season for quarterbacks.
Do you know who's thrown for the most yards in the NFL since 2016?
Benny Agbayani.
Matt Ryan.
Matt Ryan. Who's made the most money since 2016?
Kirk Cousins.
There he goes.
Now, wow. By the way,
yes.
Matt Ryan, to me, and you and I have discussed this, so I know you basically feel the same way as me. Matt Ryan's interesting because he fails the eye test. When you watch him, he looks like he's fallen off a cliff. But when you go look at his numbers, Don, you see why Indianapolis, who believes they're ready to win right now, saw Matt Ryan as an opportunity to gain stability and get a guy who's good enough to take themselves to the next level. And then on top of that, it doesn't seem like they liked Carson Wentz either. So they're bringing in someone who they think the locker room will respect. And when you look at him, even though when I watch him he's not great, statistically he still seems like he can get the job done.
You know what Matt Ryan is? Matt Ryan's like Matthew Stafford, except Atlanta sometimes was Detroit and sometimes they were the Rams.
Right.
When you look at his career with Atlanta, sometimes they're really bad, and then he's a pedestrian quarterback, and then sometimes they're really good, and he was a really good quarterback and an MVP and a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl. So Indianapolis is hoping, hey, we got a good team, and he'll be a good quarterback. But I think Atlanta's kind of been all over the map since he's been there, both good and bad. I think he's clearly on the back nine, but Indianapolis feels like that's a winnable division for them. And they really should have gone to the playoffs last year. It was ridiculous the last 2 weeks and losing to Jacksonville.
Does Lucas Oil open up or is it closed?
No, it's always been closed that I know of.
It's always closed. So I like that fit for Ryan, too, at this stage in his career, to be able to stay inside.
No, that's a good point, too. So, again, just an absolute buffet of stuff to enjoy.
Schmorg.
Is. Borg. Say
Bored.
Ray Rowe.
I don't know why I always say Borg. Makes no sense. Why would you want to? You're not putting anything on a Borg. You're putting it on a board. Just funny how some words just.
No.
Listen, I'm not born in the Midwest. Why am I throwing that name out anyway?
Yeah.
Like it's like Fargo. You got to be in like Minnesota to throw that out.
Wow.
That's at least my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't expect this.
Okay. Well, that's what's great about the show. More of your calls coming up. It's Don and Peter on the K Show. Till 7 on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K Show.
I can just picture when you come back from a bachelor party in Vermont, right?
Right.
It's like that walk of shame. Your shirt's torn. You know, the beard is all disheveled. You know, your fly might even be open. I don't know. But you come back from Vermont after a huge weekend.
Oh.
God, the stories just must be bubbling over.
Well, Don, we didn't do anything. I mean anything.
Kind of like the Yankees.
We watched a lot of basketball. Oh, yeah. Ate an obscene amount of food. I was in way too close proximity to Ballard for 48 hours.
Right.
I had one period where for about 40 minutes straight, my eyes would almost shut for me to go to sleep, and then a cough would wake me back up.
The Michael K Show.
All right, how about that?
On 98.7 ESPN.
4:02 in the big city. Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg with you till 7. Michael will join us as soon as the Yankee game is over. Bombers up 5-2 on the Phillies in the top of the ninth. Yankees are home, so we're 3 outs away from getting Michael and the Yes Network. We're all open with Yankees. Lots to get to. The NHL trading deadline was at 3 o'clock today, and the Rangers were very active. It started with getting Justin Braun from the Philadelphia Flyers. He's a defenseman. He'll either replace Schneider on the third pair or be a spare defenseman, which you definitely need because guys get hurt, and he's got 100 playoff games under his belt. Went to a Stanley Cup final with the San Jose Sharks, so that experience is going to be very, very important for the Rangers. They also go out and get Tyler Motte, who's going to be a nice winger or center on the fourth line, and Andrew Kopp from the Winnipeg Jets, who can play center or wing on the third line. So they added depth to the bottom of their forwards and a seventh defenseman, possibly a sixth defenseman. We don't know what they gave up for Andrew Kopp. Apparently it's picks and prospects, so we're kind of waiting to see. Chris Drury is going to speak at 5 o'clock. And the Islanders didn't make any moves, but they extended Zach Parise and Kyle Clutterbuck to contracts. So
love
kind of
Clutterbuck.
Interesting there, what they did, and the Devils got Hammond from Montreal. So that's all what's happening with the NHL right now with the Rangers, who had a big weekend. They get a goal, Peter, from Mika Zibanejad with 16 seconds left in regulation to beat Tampa. And then they shut out the first-place Carolina Hurricanes in Carolina 2-0 in a game in which they were outshot. What was it I had here? I think it was 44-18, Peter.
And I hear you made a – do we have the Don's call?
So I hear you made a tremendous call, Don.
On the empty netter or the Kreider goal? Play them both. Why not? I'm in charge. I'm steering the ship. If I want to steer it right into a cul-de-sac, I'll do that. So let me know when you have it. Show myself some love.
There you go. Exactly. You tell me. Now, Don, quick, before we play your call, I was listening. I was on the drive back from Vermont yesterday, and we turned on, you know, Ballard's, of course, a Villanova fan. We had to listen to the Villanova game. Can I tell you, this probably isn't a hot take, Don. I'm guessing people agree. Some of the people who do it, they do a tremendous job. But, man, basketball is the worst radio sport to me.
You think so?
I think basketball is a tough radio listen. I think that it, in terms of enjoyment, not like it won't serve a purpose for you if you're a huge fan, but in terms of saying, like, hey, could I ever enjoy consuming the game this way instead of watching, I think it's baseball, then football, then hockey, then basketball.
It's interesting. I think it's really tough when you don't know the players, right? So if you're listening to an NCAA game, right?
Right, where I don't know the players.
You don't know the players, well, then you don't know necessarily who scored. Like, so I can understand that. But I guess it really depends on what you're a fan of. But I enjoy basketball on the radio.
It's okay. Now, you want to hear something good. Don, I got both we have both calls. Which one do you want to hear first?
Well, let's go in order. Chris Kreider giving the Rangers a 1-0 lead late in the second.
Rangers trying to center, but it kicks back out behind the net. Lafreniere to the far corner, climbs the blue line, gets it back out to the point with a shot, deflection, and it's scored. And guess who in front of the net? It's Chris Kreider, his 41st goal of the year, and the Rangers get the 1-0 lead on just their 8th shot of the game.
Fantastic. All right, now the empty
goals
netter.
Goals are scored on deflections by Kreider. That's why I said yes.
Faceoff controlled by Zibanejad off the near glass and out. And now streaking for the puck is Petrano. Empty net. Dagger! And the Rangers take a 2-0 lead with 41.3 to go.
Love a dagger. Love a dagger.
Why does it always have to be exclusive to Robert Horry in the NBA, right? Like, that's who I think of when I hear dagger. Is that wrong?
Well, no. that's a totally accurate one. I, of course, think of the longtime Bullets Wizards announcer Steve Buckhands. If anyone ever wants to see a hilarious amount of daggers, he loved dagger. And he would also use it in these really depressing ways when it would be a shot to hurt the Wizards.
Oh, really?
He'd say it in this way where it sounded like he was dying.
He was stabbed by a dagger.
But no, I think Ori's fair to be like the quintessential dagger guy.
Who's your dagger guy, Andrew?
I mean, Ori is definitely the go-to. It was like his assigned role for an entire era of basketball.
It's interesting. I just picked up, Don, I picked up the Three Ring Circus again.
Okay.
And was reading the part about them acquiring Ori. And sort of what he was when he got there and how not into things he was.
Yeah.
He was dealing with stuff at home and family stuff and was unhappy. And then he showed up to L.A. and they just totally made it work with him in a different way. It was fascinating.
That was a good book. I enjoyed that during the pandemic, reading that book.
Did you start the Lakers show yet?
No, I have not. I'm sorry. I did watch a little bit of the first episode. It was on. It was like midway through. Nancy gets mad at me. I can jump into something midway through just to kind of get a feel of the characters. You guys nailed it. And I think they did a great job, too. John C. Reilly, tremendous.
Oh. The kid who plays Magic's unreal.
I'll get into it.
And
then
last week they ratcheted up the Red Auerbach. Really make Red Auerbach a pretty like savage heel kind of character. Andrew, have you watched yet?
The Lakers show? I've seen all of them except last night's.
Okay.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Nice.
And I love it. It's awesome.
It's fantastic. Yeah, I got to watch last night too.
Yankees win 5-2, so Michael should join us momentarily. Yes, as well. The other stories that are out there besides the Yankees and the Rangers making some deals here at the deadline, Peter, I don't know if we're going to get to it once Michael comes on, so I'll throw it out here. What do they do with Julius Randle? I mean, I remember, I think it was Teddy Bruschi when he was working for ESPN, used this description about Mark Sanchez. He's a front runner. And I think that's what Julius Randle is. Like last year, everything was great. He was cool with the media, great with his teammates. He was a leader. And now everything has completely been the opposite this year, and he's been impossible. He's been a bad teammate. He's been awful to the media, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. I don't know how you bring him back. I think this guy desperately needs a change of scenery, and I think he's done enough here where I think they would get a return. But, Peter, I just don't think it works here with him. It just doesn't. And they clearly are going to have to go through a rebuild and some growing pains, right? I mean, last year was an aberration. So are you ready to try to build around this guy, or do you part ways? Is it to that point where they're going to have to make that kind of decision?
Man, 6-21, 1-6 from three, you know, has a breakdown, gets into an altercation. It's
kind
a lot.
Disrespecting Toppin, right? Like that whole thing. And just
It's a lot. I do agree with you. They could get something good back for him. Here's how I look at it. Nothing has been like this team has not been special as currently constituted. The only special thing we've seen this season is RJ Barrett. And to me, Don, you now make the decision that RJ is a guy I believe who could be a cornerstone of this team, and Randall's the movable piece that could maybe get you something so you can start that build.
Hmm.
Is that fair? Because I wouldn't move Barrett.
He's the future. It just listen, Randall. He's probably somewhere in between the player last year and the player this year, which is a valuable player. But I don't think New York is suited for him. The pressure, the frustration, the microscope on him. Some of it's his fault. Some of it's just the circumstances. But I just don't think it's going to work here. And that's a decision that they're going to have to make. Looks like they're bringing Thibodeau back, so there's not going to be any major change there.
And but by the way, we all agree.
Listen, they lost to the Jazz. You're supposed to lose to the Jazz. They've got 11 games left, Peter. They're 5 back of Atlanta. Now, they play Atlanta tomorrow, so they can make up a game. But really, are they going to make up 4 games in 10?
No. Of course not.
No. So what a colossal disappointment this season was. And it looks like... Is it fair to say the Nets are locked in to the 9? They're 3 back of Toronto. No, excuse me, the 8. They're 3 back of Toronto for 7. So are the Nets locked in to the 8?
Locked? I don't know.
Well, especially with no Kyrie, 7 of the last 8. We'd like to welcome in Yes now after the Yankee game, and Michael will be joining us momentarily, so welcome to everybody that was watching the Yankees 5-2 win over the Philadelphia Phillies. So that's the basketball situation, but in the final 8 games, no Kyrie for 7 of them.
It's tough. It's tough, man.
And a play-in against Toronto with no Kyrie.
Also tough. I mean... It's just such a crazy circumstance, Don. Like, is there anything we can think of that you can even compare this to? Where you have a team that has two guys who are absolutely unreal together, but more often than not can't play at the same time?
it's going to derail their season. It could very well derail their season. And not only are we joined by Yes, Peter.
Don't say it.
We are joined by the great Michael Kay. We got to see the family during the broadcast. Tremendous job there. He's down in Tampa. He's right in his element. He's Michael Kay.
What's up, guys?
Look, you can hear it right. What's up, guys? In 3 words, I could tell that he is in the greatest of moods.
Well, why do you say that? I'm always in a good mood. You know me.
I know.
That's
I
right.
do know you. Enough to disagree with the statement you made.
Yankees just had a big win. Spring training win of the year.
Wow.
In control throughout against the
I
good
used the
Philly
line
team.
That Peter actually texted me during the broadcast. I was shocked that he was actually listening to the broadcast.
You did. You didn't credit me, but you did use it. I felt special.
Well, you know, if you wanted it to be credited, you should have said, please credit me for this line. He well, said the ocean is unforgiving and it's undefeated, and I used it.
Thank you. Well, the ocean is undefeated. Because I agreed with what Cameron Maybin was saying at the time when he said he doesn't really mess around with the ocean because he respects it too much. And I said, you know what? I am with you. I respect the ocean.
Wait,
I don't play around.
There's been plenty of people that have conquered the sea.
Jacques Cousteau.
So I disagree with that the ocean's undefeated. I disagree.
Really?
Listen, it's a perennial winner. It's a dynasty. But, you know, it's
I really miss this.
It is. Yeah, it was a long weekend, a lot of travel. You brought the fan. I thought that was great. I mean, I'm so happy for you, Charlie, getting to meet Judge. I saw Charlie and Callie with Stanton.
Well, I was saying earlier, Michael, that to me, observing Charlie, I see a kid who now truly feels the moment of getting to spend a moment with Aaron Judge or Stanton.
I think you're right. It's a good call by you. He the first guy that came over to say hello to him was Stanton. You know, I got them on the field for BP yesterday. And he really, you guys have been around Charlie. He doesn't shut up. And he lost the ability to speak. And at some, I mean, Stanton was so sweet and trying to talk with him. And then Charlie just went and hid behind Jody. And then, you know, Aaron Boone came over, took a picture. And then Aaron Judge, who, you know, he has a huge poster of Aaron Judge in his bedroom. And Judge could not have been nicer. By the way, I'll never say anything bad about Aaron Judge again. So just never.
Right. Anyone who has a great interaction with your children, just I'm glad. You know what? Just be honest.
Right.
He was great to your children. You're forgiving him for everything else.
Am I right?
He struck out four times.
If anybody is nice to your kids, that's it, right?
That's basically it, yeah.
He struck out four times. You see how hard he swung on those strikeouts?
He says hello to Charlie, right?
Yeah.
And then he goes into the clubhouse. And I said, well, that was nice of him. He was talking with him, said, you know, we got to get you in the batting cage one day. I mean, really, and Charlie was actually talking with him. And about 10 minutes later, we're all just standing there on the field. You know, I think we were watching the other team's batting practice, the Tigers. And Judge comes out of the dugout in a hurry. He goes, Charlie. And Charlie turns around and goes, here, I forgot to give you my batting gloves.
Oh.
Wow.
That's it. Fan for life.
That's it.
Locked in.
And when you see through a child's eyes, guys, I don't know if you have you've noticed this, Don, but I don't know if athletes realize what an effect they could have on kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the nicest, smallest gesture will stay with children forever. And, yeah, that was special, and that was one of those times that you realize that the lucky position that I'm in, able to give my kids that experience, is pretty special. So it was a great
awesome.
Day.
But did it feel – what I could tell is, though, that while they may have had cool experiences in the past – Charlie's now, and I can't, Charlie's developed a real interest in sports.
Yes.
So, like, the way you timed it was such that he hasn't done anything this special since he's liked sports. So right. It had that feeling of, like, oh, my God, I'm meeting Aaron Judge, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. We'll have it forever. We have a lot of pictures, and it was really, really neat. So, thank you for asking me about it. By the way, I know you've talked about the Yankees. You've talked about Julius Randle. Might be time for the season to end, just so Julius doesn't get into any trouble. But now the important part of the deal right now, the unveiling of today's Drop Madness.
Huh. I wasn't even ready. All right, guys, we continue on in a very, very crowded field. The K region, the three seeds in action.
You took the dogs out. Love that one.
A lot of people think that could win the whole thing up against the 14.
But I don't think Brooks Koepka cares. That's got an outside shot.
I know, yep. But it's just a bad matchup.
It's a tough matchup for Brooks Koepka cares. Cares. The sixth seed.
Oh, stop.
Also up against the 11.
I'm up before the cows.
And then I eat them. Wow, that was a mean one.
Just a really mean dig at Dave. That's the K region. So we go to the Peter region, everyone's favorite. Let's check out the three seed.
Fred Fry, team on Saturday, I don't know no more.
Ed Orgeron up against the 14.
Eberflus.
Big matchup. But that also is right next to this game, which is very exciting. It's on True TV. The 6 seed, Jabroni Pumpleduck, up against the 11.
I want it to be the cream filling of a Kirkshen sandwich.
Oh, my God.
See, Andrew makes that
joke. Yeah, Andrew does make that.
Now we go to the Don region. And, guys, you know how this is number one to me. Don's 3 seed.
Go back to mailing.
Up against the 14.
Is Mike Thibodeau the right coach for this team right now?
I got to tell you, that's a tough matchup. Backding Mailing against Mike Thibodeau.
He's gold.
That's tough. Let's hear the 6 seed.
Please, dear God in heaven, like me for 5 seconds.
Up against the 11.
That might be the winner.
Well, I just wanted to ask you guys if you saw any of the Waste Management Phoenix Open this weekend.
No, not at all, and I want to talk about it. Thank you for the phone call.
He's an ornery fellow, that Don LaGreca. Let's go to the Nether region. Here it is, the early bird special matchup. This one's 4:15 on Lifetime. We have the 3 seed.
You're a big boxing guy, right?
I hate boxing.
I profiled. You know what? I elderly profiled.
You know what? Harry could win the whole
thing. More people should listen.
I swear to you, Harry could win the whole thing with that. Up against Don's mom.
Huh?
That's right. And I think that's a very tough matchup for Mrs. LaGreca.
Yes, it is.
You know, your confidence that Harry likes boxing just because he's old.
Yes.
And him destroying you so easily. And
as nicely as he can.
And it taps into this strange dynamic that exists where Harry loves all of us, but at multiple times has blatantly disagreed with Don. It's very entertaining. Let's go to the 6 seed in the Nether region.
I hope they lose.
Up against the 11 seed.
Mm.
Which is known as Carlin Noise.
Mm.
That will do it.
I like that.
That will do it for today's matchups. You can go vote starting right now on TMKS ESPN on Twitter.
Shocking that I hope they lose up big.
Isn't it strange that I hope they lose could win? Think about it.
Wow, that's thick.
It is, right? Thick with irony.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, I know. I have to ask you a question, Peter. I was thinking about you over the weekend.
Aww. Thank you.
And I want to know if you were watching the Duke game on Saturday.
Apparently there's nothing else to do.
Well, first of all, Duke played Friday and Sunday, but go ahead.
Oh, was it? What is today? Monday?
Today's Monday.
Played yesterday. So, yeah, yesterday.
I was watching.
How could you not have been rooting for them?
Oh, really easily.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, and the way he acted afterward, he was, like, really choked up about his team, how hard they played. I thought it was that was one of the best games of the tournament, how great it was.
You know, you're not going to get me to all of a sudden have a moment after this, all this time, where I go, you know what?
Give me
I had
moment.
It all wrong. I want them to win.
Come on. You know you want to see him win. And he's great in that commercial with Lilly.
No, no.
You don't like him in the AT&T commercial? You like Stafford in that one?
No, no. Wow, listen.
Do you like anything, Peter?
I'll tell you what I like. St. Peter's. I'm here for St. Peter's.
That's it.
I love this bandwagon. I've only heard of this team for, I don't know, maybe less than a week. But I'll tell you what. I am their number one fan.
So you now like this team more than you like Canisius.
Oh, definitely more than Canisius. This is my team. In the
Canisius?
Match.
Canisius?
This is my team.
Wow. Wow. I mean, now Seton Hall's job is open. I couldn't believe that Willard said that. Wasn't that weird, Don? That was a bad look for him. Well, I don't know if I'm going to be here, but I would want Shaheen Holloway to take, you know, the position. Well, Shaheen Holloway's team is still playing, Coach.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have said that.
But it does seem inevitable, doesn't it?
Well, unless you can get an even better job.
I know. I sort of wish.
Are you happy with him at Maryland, Peter?
I'm fine, although I got to tell you, I mean, I know this is just being hyped because of what we're seeing and knowing more, and I don't pay attention to Seton Hall. At this moment, I probably would have been more psyched if Maryland hired Shaheen Holloway.
Wow. I mean, really a bandwagon guy.
But it's easy to fall into it, right? When you see, let's be real. All these coaches, these coaches go on these runs. And, I mean, listen, yesterday we were listening to Jim Larrañaga call a game. We still know of Jim Larrañaga because of back-to-back years when he went on a run out of nowhere. So, like, these moments when coaches take a team that has no business being there on a run, they are going to be guys who get lined up for a huge opportunity. So since I'm really familiar and enjoying Holloway's style, I admit it. I probably would have been more psyched about getting him at Maryland.
Can I stop you for a second? I hope this doesn't make next year's drop madness. Jim Larranega did not call a game. He coached a game.
Boy, why did I feel like I heard him talking
He's
before?
He's the coach of Miami, you animal.
Well, maybe I was just listening.
They beat Auburn.
There he goes. Listen, okay, whatever. How did he get the Miami job?
What do you mean, how did he get it?
Where was he before that?
Where was he?
Go ahead.
Where was he?
Keep going. You'll remember. It was a big one. George Mason.
He made on a run with George Mason.
And Mason was like, what, a 13 seed, 14 seed? But, like, up till then, no one's talking about the future of Jim Larranega. Now he's had a great job, and apparently I thought I heard him do commentary yesterday.
No, you must have been dreaming. It must have been some of the hallucinogens you got at the bat.
But how well do you know the sound of his voice to think he's calling a game?
So well. It's a voice that I have permanently stuck
in my brain. If Jim Larranega came into your apartment right now, right?
Yeah.
And bludgeoned you to death with a ball peen hammer, you wouldn't know who he was.
I'm pretty sure he's balding.
You wouldn't know him in a lineup.
Oh, no, there he is.
You could not pick him out of a lineup.
There he is. I was right. He's bald.
That narrows it down because there's so few bald people in the world. Wow. Oh, boy. All right, let's take a brief time out.
Yeah, we should.
Glad we got back together and better than ever. You know, everything Greeny says. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number. So settle in, towel off. We got a lot to do until 7 o'clock. It's Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, Larranega, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is the Michael Kay Show.
Yesterday, we were listening to Jim Larranega call a game.
Can I stop you for a second? I hope this doesn't make next year's drop madness. Jim Larranega did not call a game. He coached a game.
Boy, why did I feel like I heard him?
To begin with, I was tuned into the games before us, and I listened to Charles Barkley tell the CBS crew that if Auburn won, he would take off his shirt. And I thought to myself, man, no one wants to see that, Chuck.
He's the coach of Miami, you animal.
Maybe I was just listening.
They beat Auburn.
There he goes. I listen, okay, whatever.
The Michael Kay Show.
And apparently I thought I heard him do commentary yesterday.
No, you must have been dreaming.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so I don't live in a vacuum.
No.
And I know, you guys opened the show with this, I know that Yankee fans, I wouldn't say everybody, but a certainly loud portion of their fan base, not at all happy with the way the Yankees have put this team together. And there were a lot of sexy, desirable free agents on the market, especially at shortstop where the Yankees had a hole. And the way it turns out, they traded Sanchez and Urshela, and they got back a catcher, Ben Rortvedt, who has an oblique issue. And Brian Cashman said moments ago that they knew he had an oblique issue. He might not be ready for opening day. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa to play shortstop, and Josh Donaldson taking on the $50 million that he has remaining on his contract, 36 years old, and put him at third base. Now, what makes it look even worse for Yankee fans is that by taking that money off of the Minnesota Twins' ledger, the Minnesota Twins then had the money to go and sign Carlos Correa to a 3-year contract for the highest average annual value of any position player in Major League history. You knew that's what Scott Boras was trying to do. And I was saying from the very beginning that I would have had no problem getting Correa. Forget about the nonsense that he cheated. I mean, really, stop. If he could help you win, he could help you win. But the perfect scenario would be if one of these great shortstop that was on the free agent market would go for 1 year. Didn't look like any of them were. They were getting big money and big years. But Correa essentially signed a 1-year deal. And the only way it extends to more than 1 year is if he gets hurt. So it's a 3-year deal with opt-outs after the first and second year. So Yankee fans are red hot, and I'm not going to sit here and say they're wrong to be red hot, because I said this at the beginning of last week, guys. None of the moves that they made would fall under the heading of sexy that would excite a fan base. But Brian Cashman, you know, again, speaking to the media moments ago, said we love the team that we have, and we're going into the season with the highest payroll that we've ever had in the team's history, which is all true. But they have the third highest payroll in baseball, behind the Mets and the Dodgers. So the Yankees are at like 254, something like that. So they're over two of the thresholds. The first threshold's 230, then it's 250. So it doesn't look like they want to go to the third threshold, and they don't want to go near the Cohen tax. And they feel that this is their team. Now, I think they're still in on the two pitchers from Oakland, Montas and Manaea. I think it's going to take a lot to get them. So when you sit back and you see the moves that the teams in front of them made, Chapman goes to the Blue Jays. The Red Sox ended up signing Trevor Story. And, you know, other teams really improved as well. The Minnesota Twins have improved. The Detroit Tigers with Javi Baez, they've improved. I'm going to tell you this, everybody, and I don't think this is what people want to hear. The Yankees didn't get beaten out on any of these guys. And I wonder if you agree with me, Don. They didn't want them. They didn't want them.
Right.
For those that don't know, there's a rule in the basic agreement in baseball. No team could say we are not interested in that player. It's against the basic agreement, because if the Yankees say we're out, we don't want Correa, that affects Correa's market. So that has been written into the basic agreement. So the Yankees have to sit back when they are, you know, rumored to be in on this guy. And they can't say no, we're not. They can't say no, we're not. I don't think they were in on any of them.
No.
They love the shortstops they have in their system, and they feel that Kiner-Falefa is going to be just fine at shortstop, really good defensively. He'll pick up base hits. He can run. He's got stolen bases, whatever the case may be. I don't think that they were in on Correa. They weren't in on Story. They were never in on Seager. None of them. They were never in on any of them. So if you want to be mad that they weren't, that's cool.
But I
would ask you guys this. Don't think that they got beaten out on these guys. They didn't want them. They just didn't want them. They have that much faith in their shortstops coming up.
We had a caller earlier in the show that said Brian Cashman's incompetent. No, he's not. We had a call last week to say he was asleep at the wheel. No, he's not. You know, say what you want about Brian Cashman. He's working his tail off. It's just a disagreement on how you believe the team should be built and how he believes the team should be built. And I'm with you 100%. Now, I do think there were conversations with Story and Correa, maybe for no other reason but to drive the price up for somebody else. It's always good to have the Yankees in the conversation on being in on a player because that can scare a lot of teams and maybe throwing or offering more money, afraid the Yankees are going to steal them away. But this is just a disagreement, and we'll find out whether the fans are right or whether Brian's right. Brian's got a vision for this team on how to build it, and all it is a disagreement. He is not incompetent. He is not asleep at the wheel.
Now, another thing that Yankee fans are upset about, and I get it. Again, I'm not here to bash Yankee fans. You could feel the way you feel, and if you don't feel good about the team, you have the right not to feel good about the team. As I said, the moves they made were strategic. They weren't sexy. They're not something that you're going to trumpet on the back page of the New York Post. They're not those sort of moves. But they feel that they're efficient moves that make them better. And they are better than they were last year. They are. But, you know, their payroll's at 256, which is 254, which is the highest it's ever been.
Okay.
But why isn't it as high as the Dodgers and the Mets? That's, I hear a lot of that from Yankee fans as well. They don't want to go there. They don't feel they have to go there. And the thing that gets me about the team, and this is the only thing I'll sit back and criticize. For 254, there are a lot of question marks. There are a lot of holes. So this team is put together with the express purpose of gambling on a couple of things happening the right way. Aaron Hicks has to stay healthy and produce. You expect Joey Gallo to return to the means and be the player that he was in Texas. There's going to be strikeouts, but be a better player than he was. You're going to expect Josh Donaldson to stay healthy and play about 135 games. He did it last year. Can he do it again? You're expecting both of these young catchers, Higgy's not that young, he's in his 30s, to platoon, be great behind the plate, and they are really good defensively, and it's not going to matter that they might hit 170 combined, but they might run into 15 home runs. There's so much that you're gambling about.
Have a Judge and for two, too.
Stanton has to stay healthy. Judge has to stay on the field. All of those things. Rizzo has to be the Rizzo that he was when they first got him, not after COVID, which they think sapped him a little bit of energy.
Torres has to be better.
You're expecting him not to hit 38 home runs again, but to hit in the double figures at least, maybe 20, something like that. So that would be my only major criticism. You put together a $254 million payroll, and the team is full of questions. There's no slam dunks. There's not a slam dunk there. Even Gerrit Cole, who I think the world of, and I think he's a special pitcher, and he finished second in Cy Young. Is he going to be able to pitch without the sticky stuff to the level that he did with the Astros? Or is he going to be great one game, not so good the next game? He's not even a sure thing. Even Chapman's not a sure thing. Is he going to have that 1.5 month run where he's awful? I just think for 254, there's got to be more sure things, and there's not a lot of sure things there. Now, if all of those sure things happen, Don and Peter, they could be great. They could win 100 games, and they could make a run to the World Series. But how often in life does everything that's a maybe come out to be a positive?
Oh,
it doesn't happen very often.
Especially with this team, Michael, with their history with injuries. Seems like every year somebody's hurt. We go through it time and time again, even going back to Joe Girardi. It's not something that's new. It's been going on for half a decade. Where it seems like when you're going to find somebody that's going to go on the disabled list or be hurt or not live up to expectations because of injury. But you mentioned the payroll, Michael. You look at the Mets. All right, the Mets are way better than they were last year. Now, we'll see how it all turns out, but you got people like Jim Leland who think they're going to win the division, and I think you'd be surprised if they didn't finish either first or second in the National League East. And the Dodgers, you've got Jeff Passan. Saying that it's one of the greatest lineups he's ever seen in the 20 years of covering baseball. And you have the Yankees with their payroll that they could possibly finish fourth in their division. Now, they could win their division for sure, but like you said, you'd like with that high of a payroll to have some assurance. And they don't have any because they're only what's the word you would use, Michael? Marginally better? Slightly better than last year?
I think they're better. I don't know if it's marginally or slightly. They're better. They're better. But again, they're much better if all those things come positive. But if they don't, then they're not better.
But the best way to bet is that it's going to be 50-50. Not everything's going to come up negative, and not everything's going to be positive. All right, maybe everything comes together and you win 110 games and run away with it. And maybe everything falls apart and you do finish in fourth place. But the way the Blue Jays got better, you know, the Red Sox getting Story, the Rays, doesn't seem to matter who they lose. They're always in the conversation. It's a tough division. It's a very, very difficult division. The only guarantee is that Baltimore is going to finish in last. And you right. look at the way the Twins have improved. As you mentioned, the Tigers have improved. You know, so if you do have to drop to the wild card, Michael, is it a fait accompli? You'll be one of the three.
Well, with the teams that are improving, I don't know if it's a fait accompli. I think this team's a playoff team. What it can do moving forward, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
But that's what the knee-jerk reaction is, to always jump the fans and say they're wrong. Now, I think they're wrong when they say that Brian doesn't know what he's doing. I think they had a plan and they executed their plan. But to be upset that the New York Yankees didn't get one of the marquee free agents, that, I get it. I mean, in fact, the Yankees have not had a marquee free agent since 2009 other than Gerrit Cole, not one. They didn't go after Harper. They didn't go after Machado. They didn't go after Correa. I mean, these are like Hall of Fame-bound players. They didn't do it. So, and a lot of these fans grew up when the Yankees did it. And all of a sudden, they're wondering, why don't they do it anymore? And the thing I will push back on, cheap. They're not cheap. At 254, they're not cheap. But you do wonder why 254 doesn't buy you a sexier team. But sexy doesn't matter. If they do the job and they win, it doesn't matter if they're sexy and if they're big names and Hall of Fame-bound players. If they're a little engine that could, which I don't understand how you could be at 254, well, then good.
Yeah.
They did what they had to do. But I get why the fans are a little chapped right now.
And listen, they get judged differently than everybody else, Michael, right? Because it's not about making the playoffs. I mean, the Yankee fan expects that. Winning 100 games in the regular season, they saw 203 wins combined in 18 and 19. They want to see a championship. And they don't feel right now like this is a championship-caliber team, and they love to be proven wrong. And Michael, let's be honest, too. There's a lot of things that happen here where you have to place faith in Brian Cashman. And I don't think this fan base has a lot of faith in him. Right or wrong, is it fair to say this fan base is a little dubious right now on the ability for Brian Cashman to build a championship team? So you think they're going to side on some of these things breaking Brian's way? Probably not.
All right, let's take some phone calls, give you a chance to sound off for sure. Let's go to Pat in Manhattan. Pat.
Hey, Michael, Don, Rosenberg. I got to tell you, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling sunny. I know all these other fans who are looking down at us. We won 92 games last year, and we are a better team than we were last year. The sun's out. Baseball's back. Be in a good mood. Donaldson, Kiner Falefa, LeMahieu, Rizzo, that's a better infield than last year. Hicks is back. Sanchez's horrible juju's out of the clubhouse. Severino's back. Nasty Nestor and J-Mo look great today. And we still got moves. Like we got to move Glaber, and that's going to fill, I don't know, another starting pitcher or something. But, like, I never even wanted Correa. Story would have locked up too many years of shortstop when we got great prospects. So I guess my question is right now, 92 wins last year. Do you disagree with me? We're going to get more wins this year. That's a playoff team. We still got moves in the tank to be way more competitive. How can you disagree?
I mean, if I ever run for office, Pat, I want you as my hype man. I mean, you're better than the Rosenbergs were for the McGovern campaign. Listen, I'm glad you feel that way. And things could work out that way, but I don't think there's any slam dunk. The team that I fear the most, there's two teams I fear the most in the American League, and they're in the same division. It's Toronto, who's gotten better in its pitching, and their lineup is great, and Tampa Bay. Now, I think the Red Sox got better with Story, but take a look at the Red Sox. There's a lot of holes in their pitching, and I don't love their bullpen either, so... The Red Sox aren't the team that scares me, although, you know, they always seem to put together a great season. But the Blue Jays and the Rays, those are beasts. Those are potential beasts.
But I think the caller is missing the overall point from the majority of the fan base. He just described what the Yankees have been for the last decade, a team that's going to win 90-plus games and go to the playoffs. But it hasn't been good enough to win a championship. So you could pat yourself on the back and say, I think we built a really good team. I think we built a team that can contend and go to the playoffs. Okay, that's supposed to be a given. What are you going to do once you go to the playoffs? And is the playoffs winning the division something they've only done, what, twice since 2009? Or having to settle for a wild card with a team with less than half the payroll as you is winning the division? And the Red Sox with less than a payroll, Blue Jays less payroll, being at least on paper better than you. You know, that they don't want to be in a situation, Michael, where they win 96 games and they're losing in the wild card to the Red Sox again.
Right. No, I mean, I think it's going to be a very interesting year. I think it's going to be a team that's going to be interesting to watch. But
they've been that for 30 years. You just described the Yankees for 30 years.
Well, I don't see a sure thing. But I don't see a sure thing. The only sure thing I could see is the Dodgers. I thought the Dodgers were a sure thing last year and they lost.
No, listen, this is baseball, Michael, right? It's never the best team doesn't always win. Matter of fact, the best team usually doesn't win. But you're talking about one given year. We're talking about since 2009. I'm just defending the Yankee fan for saying that, hey, you're going to have a competitive team. You're going to have a fun team to watch. Well, they've had that for 30 years. The expectations are higher than that.
Let's go to John in West Hampton. John.
Oh, hey, gentlemen. Longtime Yankee fan and longtime caller.
Thanks.
Love the show. I'd like to give a shout-out to Peter for his work on Dark Side of the Ring. I think he did a great job.
No, not Dark Side of the Ring. Sorry, A&E Biography.
I'm sorry, A&E Biography. I apologize.
Gentlemen,
as a longtime Yankee fan, I had two hopes for the 2022 season, and both have come through. Number one, I wanted the Yankees to get rid of Gary Sanchez. He lost too many games for the Yankees. And the other thing I wanted the Yankees to do was to get rid of Luke Voit, because once Rizzo was hired, I thought he was a malcontent saying he deserved to play more. He never said he was better. He simply said he deserved to play more. So my hopes have come true. And I'd like to ask this one question. Why is the Yankee fan base convinced that they are entitled to the Yankees winning a championship every season? How about simply getting better and being patient?
Well, again, John, it seems like you're going into two camps. It's almost like a microcosm of this country. They feel entitled to that because that's the way this team was marketed since 1973. So you can't just all of a sudden change the narrative. They've always said it. You know, if we don't win a World Series, we want to win a World Series. So they expect to be the best. And they were the best from 1996, from 1994 on until 2001. So, and even after that, they kept making the playoffs. They made the playoffs 12 straight years under Joe Torre. And every single year, it seemed like they had a chance to win the World Series. So I'm not going to knock them for the way that, they were brought up that way, right? World Series or bust. If we don't win a World Series, the season was a failure. That was spoken. So now you're going to ask people all of a sudden change. And I think it has changed because I think the sport's different than when George Steinbrenner was in power. It's different. There's luxury taxes. There's revenue sharing. It's much different. It's much more difficult to keep a consistent championship team together.
No, there's no question. But forget about Brian. Forget about George. You know, Brian comes on the Michael Kay Show and says it's not about a championship, it's about championships. You've set a certain standard.
Right.
And so every year you don't win the first one, then how do you have the audacity to talk about 2, 3, and 4? You didn't even win the first one yet. And really haven't come close. You haven't been to a World Series since 2009. The closest you came was the 2017 team that Michael probably put all the expectations out of whack because that team was probably not good enough to go that far and did.
Right, they just surprised people.
You know, so... And now they haven't been able to get back to that point. Never mind the fact they changed managers, too. And no offense to Aaron Boone, but he hasn't been able to match what Joe Girardi did in his last season. So the expectations are through the roof, not from the fans, not from the media, but from the Yankees themselves.
Let's go to Ray in East Orange. Ray.
Hey, Mike, Don, Peter. It's great to always be on the air. Long-time listener, long-time Yankee fan. I just want to say, Mike, thank you for keep telling the Yankee fans who don't know the economics about baseball on telling them how it is. This is how the Yankees operate, okay? Even though with their new 250-plus payroll, they don't want to spend the money on these new high-profile players. They don't want these players because they just don't want them. And like, I think Brian Cashman has done an overall good job over the years because – if they can
win games the way that they can with the current payroll and how the current new playoff system is, all you need to do is like, okay, if you get into the one-game wild card game, all you need to do is win one game and you're in the ALDS and you get a shot at the World Series without your so-called sexy picks.
Well, this there's no more one-game wild card. It's now a best of three.
Right.
So it's changed for this year. Listen, I let me clarify one thing. The Yankees didn't want any of these players that were on the market because they felt that in the pipeline, they've got players that they're going to have control of for 6 years once they get here that they think are going to be great in Volpe and Peraza. Volpe and Peraza. And Trey Sweeney was their number one draft pick last year, and he's a shortstop too. But when they will spend big is when they see something on the market that they don't think that they could get anywhere else. And that's what they saw with Gerrit Cole. They don't have a number one starter in their system. And it's hard to trade for them. That's why they spent the most money ever spent on a pitcher up to that point. That's why you can't call them cheap. They didn't go for Machado. They didn't go for Harper. They didn't feel they were fit, and they felt that they had other pieces that could do the same thing at a lot less of the money. So it's not like they won't spend, because, again, $254 is an amazing payroll. But they simply will not buy stuff that they think that they can get in a different way and not the same price. And I think that's, Don, why they went after Stanton, because that's a controlled contract for another one. They got him another 10 years that would be below market. You look at Stanton's contract now.
Right.
It's a bargain. It's a bargain compared to what, like, Soto's going to get. Soto's going to get $50 million a year. So they got a controlled contract, and they know that if Stanton stays healthy, he's excellent. So it's not that they're cheap and that they won't shop in the aisle of big money, but only if they can, only if that's the only place that they can get that what they need. And that was the case with Gerrit Cole.
But you have to hope that these prospects pan out. If they don't, right, then it's going to look really bad.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's take a brief timeout. Got a lot more to do. Kay, LeGreco, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
A couple of things about the tournament. I don't think that seeding matters all that much anymore. I think there's parity across college basketball. And even when you have a great team like Kentucky or Duke or, you know, teams with a lot of freshmen, I think that is counteracted by teams that are together for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So a team like St. Peter's that's been together for a couple of years, they can do some damage. I think they're doing more damage than we thought. But I don't think upsets of this sort are going to be so rare anymore, because I just think that those are the great equalizer. Those teams that get the little engine that could, guys that have a chip on their shoulder, those guys stay for 2, 3, 4 years, and they're just going to counteract the overall better talent that the one-and-dones have. And it's going to be interesting. The Sweet 16 is going to be interesting. We've seen teams knocked out, like Baylor gets knocked out. They just do. So I just don't think there's that overwhelming favorite anymore that's going to roll through a field, because I think the whole thing is, you know, parity is affected now, college basketball.
And you're right. There's chemistry, a continuity that helps during the course of a game. Now, you're going to get to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, the Final Four. The talent's just going to be too overwhelming for a St. Peter's, right?
Maybe.
They just hope they can go as far as they can, Peter. And again, it's a great story, but that's why teams like this usually don't win the championship.
But here's the thing. This is what goes back to, Michael, before you joined us, we talked about at the top of the show. And did you watch the St. Peter's game?
Yes, Michael? every second.
Okay, me too. So that was a team that from the opening whistle did not – it's like they didn't know they were an underdog. They didn't play that game like this scrappy team that's less than that. They played hard. Don't get me wrong. They were scrappy and tenacious. But there is a belief that they have that they should be playing with these teams.
Yeah, they feel they belong. They're not thinking they're shocking the world.
No.
They think they go into games thinking they're going to win. I mean, once you beat Kentucky, I mean, what's to say they can't beat any team that's in the field?
That's the
Kentucky
thing.
Kentucky has an overabundance of talent, and they won.
And what was the spread Saturday? It had to be less than 18.5, right? So
yes.
Obviously Kentucky was the heavy lifting. Murray State is not Kentucky, but I would think Murray State's got some continuity. I don't think they have a ton of one-and-dones, right?
I would think not. But that's, you know, I think they were 7th or 8th, right? So still, yeah, they're St. Peter's, you know,
and
15
Murray State,
is amazing.
Murray State is still a regular tournament
team. Yeah.
I mean, I've been seeing Murray State in the tournament my whole life. It's a different sort of animal there, but I don't know, man. You start to think that they could believe they can beat Purdue. Why not?
I wonder if Holloway, you know, now with the Seton Hall job open, if that becomes a distraction for these kids. I thought they had a fascinating conversation with Ernie and Kenny and Clark and Charles when they talked about the Duke kids. You know, are they really playing for Krzyzewski, or are they so self-centered and egomaniacal, which, you know, an 18-year-old could and should be, that, you know, they're just playing for themselves? So will Shaheen Holloway possibly leaving St. Peter's, which seems like it's almost a fait accompli, will that be a distraction? I don't know. I hope not. It's just you guys know how I feel about the coaching carousel. It sickens me. You know, contracts don't mean anything. Jobs open up, and, you know, this guy does a great job. I want him to have a great career and advance and whatever, but it stinks for St. Peter's, who finally found a coach that could, you know, what he's done in 4 years there is just absolutely amazing.
But it could work the other way, too, where you're just so proud and happy for him that you want to do as much as you can before he leaves. If you're a St. Peter's, if you're a Manhattan, you're an Iona, you know that you're going to have a coach that's going to be there, either like Patino, who's at the end of his career, or you're going to get somebody that's young and's looking for another job. I mean, no offense to St. Peter's, but nobody takes that job and figures, I'll coach here for the next 35 years. So I think the players understand that. They know that. And maybe they're going to want to try to win for him before he leaves. And going to Seton Hall, where he played, it's the deepest a New Jersey team has gotten since 2000 when he was with Seton Hall.
Yeah.
So he didn't screw them. I mean, he didn't break any promises with them. So I think it could work the other way, where they want to win for him before he takes that job at Seton
Hall. And listen, you know, that's where, like, the kind of coach you are plays such a role. Like, if he handles it the right way and he treats his team like adults who can have a real conversation, I think they can have a conversation about everything that's going on and completely focus. And is there any world in which, like, you could do enough with St. Peter's where you think, you know what, I'm going to come back and do it. I believe I can get this team even further and I'll still get the good job after that?
No.
You can't do it, right?
You got to grab it while you're...
Because these jobs don't just come up. It's not like other jobs.
Especially if I don't know if it's his dream to play for Seton Hall where he played, as Don said, but that job might not be open again for another 10 years. So, and, you know, schools like St. Peter's, they have their runs. They get the right combination of players and they go on a run. And they might not be back for 5 or 6 years. So you got to strike while the iron is hot. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes our society really gets me. So Rex Chapman was a great basketball player for Kentucky. Then he ran into a lot of off-court issues and really straightened his life out.
Yep.
And came back into the public eye because he used social media for good, to actually highlight good things and good people and things like that. And it was a sweet story. And then TBS said, let's take a chance and put him on, right? So he's rough. You know, he's not a broadcaster per se, but it's a nice story. And he made a mistake over the weekend where he pulled the Don. He killed Pete Gillen.
Right.
Who said, he said, rest in peace, Pete Gillen. Well, Pete Gillen, thank goodness, is not dead. And the people out there could not rip this guy enough and revel in the mistake that he made. It's amazing. I wonder what drives people to do that. People that would never even get an opportunity to operate at that level that he's operating at. And they took such joy and the vitriol that they handed down toward Rex Chapman. I don't know how to navigate society anymore. I don't know what people want. I don't know why that makes them happy. That, a gotcha moment.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
A guy who really has rehabilitated his life and is concentrated on bringing joy to people's lives makes a terrible mistake. Nobody died, though. I mean,
no.
Literally, nobody died. And people just tear them apart.
Well, because they're nobodies. And I mean that in the sincerest of ways, okay? They realize that they can't do what Rex Chapman does. They realize they'll never be on television. So what they do is they revel in the mistakes made to make themselves feel better, They know they can't reach that level, so let's bring those people down to my level. That's the motivation behind it. Like, why else would you do it? It's typical social media.
Who hasn't killed – Don killed Sidney Poitier. Right. Just today, I took Jim Larrañaga out of coaching and put him on the sidelines as a commentator.
Yeah.
People make mistakes.
Yeah, I can't sympathize with that. Let's go to Peter in Midland Park. Peter?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. Love your show. Long-time listener.
Thanks.
I just wanted to make a comment on seeing your kids today on TV, kind of in awe of getting to meet their heroes on the Yankees. And it just reminded me when I was 7, my brother was 9, we happened to be classmates of the great Jerry Coleman, who lived in our town.
Okay.
And my first Yankee game, 1959, Jerry Coleman escorted us both into the Yankee dressing room and got the opportunity to share discussions with the likes of Yogi Berra, Whitey Ford, Gil McDougall, in the back of the room, Mickey Mantle sitting, you know, getting dressed for the game, and eventually being escorted into the office of Casey Stengel, kind of just, again, just in awe, not even knowing what to say. You're just a little kid just looking at your heroes. And Elston Howard handed it. 63
years later, it still resonates with you, right, Peter?
Yep.
Absolutely. It just brought back memories of, you know, I still have a hand-signed baseball from the 1959 team. And my brother and I remember it like it was yesterday. And I'm sure your kids, when they get older, are still going to remember, you know, their meeting Judge and Stanton like we did as kids. And it was an experience we'll never forget, and I'm sure they won't either.
Well, thanks for sharing that. That's my hope. I mean, you know, I don't do things like that. But, you know, at spring training, I would never impact a regular season game. I just thought that was a perfect opportunity, relaxed atmosphere, and the Yankees were great about it. And, you know, Cali experienced everything Charlie did. I'm talking about Charlie because Cali doesn't really care. Because that's Cali.
Now, did she? Cali is older though, and she pays attention to what's going on. What was even if she didn't care as much? Was she aware of who they were?
Yeah, I think she was.
Like
yeah.
she hears
I mean,
the name.
Aaron
she
Judge's
hears
poster is in Charlie's bedroom.
Right. But she wasn't overly impressed.
Well, you know what? She does stuff. You know, I always tell both of them, when you meet somebody, you shake their hand and you look in their eye and you say, "Nice to meet you." And that was Callie's one-up on Charlie yesterday because she knew that Charlie was living kind of the dream. But whenever she met these people, she would look right in their, you know, hard handshake, look in their eye. And Charlie was shy.
Right.
And so that was the thing she brought up later. I did exactly what you tell me to do, Daddy. And Charlie couldn't even look at them. Yes, you did, Cal. But I don't think it meant that much to him.
And by the way, that's the kind of showing off Michael would do if he was Callie's age as well. Let's just be honest.
Right. But that's good advice for children.
Yes.
Shake your hand firmly and look in somebody's eye and say, "Nice to meet you."
I think that's what you're supposed to do. That's right.
But Charlie, as I said earlier, when he met Stan, he lost the ability to speak, lost all function. He was just flabbergasted. It was kind of neat to see, but he did regain himself and actually had a discussion with Judge. 1-800-919-3776. Take some phone calls. Peter is working feverishly on what I'm sure is going to be a great ENN. There's no better ENN than a Monday of the Sweet 16. It's just that important.
No,
and voting
continues
for Drop Madness. There's some very tight matchups. You can go to TMKS ESPN on Twitter and make your vote. Make your voice heard. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
So the Nets have announced that Ben Simmons, acquired from the Sixers, has a herniated disc. But Steve Nash, the Nets coach, is saying that he believes that he will play this season, in the regular season and in the postseason. Well, that's certainly some pie-in-the-sky thought there from Nash. He hasn't been on the court yet since last June, and now he has a herniated disc after getting an epidural. And if he's on the court, I'd be really surprised. And boy, what you did, if you didn't trade James Harden, yeah, you would have lost him for nothing. But the Sixers would not be in the position that they're in either. But now it's the two guys that came to Brooklyn to win a championship, I think, are going to have to try to do it themselves. And the only way they do it themselves is if, in fact, Kyrie is allowed to play.
And right now, Kyrie's not going to play in 7 of the last 8 regular season games. There's only 11 games left. And if Simmons can't get on the court, when is he going to get out? Maybe like the last 2 games of the season?
There's no way he'll be sharp enough. There's no way he'll be able to get his lungs right. And there's no way they'll have any chemistry.
And there's a possibility that if you haven't played in this long and your first games are playoff intensity, him getting hurt again.
Right.
Which also, they just can't afford. And I asked Peter this, Michael. Are they kind of locked into the 8? They're 3 games back of Toronto with 11 to play. The Hornets are 1 game away from this. So I guess they can drop to 9. But even getting to 7 to get the home court against Toronto right now is slipping through their fingers.
Well, I mean, the best thing is that Toronto drops and rises and Cleveland drops into the 7. And then the Nets stay at 8, then you play the game in Cleveland, and Kyrie can play.
Right, and that's 1 game separation right now in the loss column between Cleveland and Toronto. Cleveland's won a couple in a row, but just playing .500 basketball. Toronto's playing better. So, yeah, that's your
huge difference that makes.
It'll be gigantic.
But the tough thing is here for Sean Marks and everyone in Brooklyn, ultimately, if it turns out they don't get Simmons at all this year, and they come up short because they don't have that third player, and particularly if Philly goes on a run with Harden, Michael, there's no way to say it doesn't end up looking like a huge mistake and a failure.
No. Well, absolutely, because Harden was going to play for the Nets. If they didn't trade him, he was going to have to play.
That's what I'm saying, and we already know he might have been annoying for a stretch. He's not throwing away a whole year of his career. He's not Ben Simmons. He was going to play at some point.
Well, another big story that came out today, and it came out in a very quiet way. I'm sure you've all heard about it. A letter detailing a 2017 investigation into the Yankees will become a public document 2 years after a federal judge ruled that it should be unsealed. This is on ESPN.com by June Lee. The plaintiffs in a lawsuit over the daily fantasy ramifications of electronic sign stealing in baseball allege that a 2017 news release from Rob Manfred hid the full findings of what MLB discovered the Yankees had done. The letter's impending release will reveal any differences between what Manfred said in public about his findings and what was revealed in private. Manfred wrote the letter to Yankees GM Brian Cashman, and it is alleged to contain proof of the team's sign-stealing methods from 2017, when New York was busted for improperly using a dugout phone, and the Red Sox were found to be using Apple Watches to pick up on signals from opposing teams. A source told ESPN it will be at least 2 weeks before the letter is made public. Now, Yankee team president Randy Levine argued against the release of the letter in December 2020, saying it would raise serious privacy issues and that the letters by the Astros and the Red Sox filed as confidential in the suit weren't being made public. Levine also said the letter would harm the Yankees' reputation. The Yankees argue that the harm from the unsealing of the Yankees' letter will rise because its content would be distorted to falsely and unfairly generate the confusing scenario that the Yankees had somehow violated MLB sign-stealing rules when, in fact, the Yankees did not, the court wrote. That argument, however, carries little weight. Disclosure of the document will allow the public to independently assess MLB's conclusion regarding the internal investigation as articulated to the Yankees, and the Yankees are fully capable of disseminating their own views regarding the actual content of the Yankees' letter. Yankees, according to Evan Drellick of The Athletic, Yankees and MLB have 14 days to decide whether to appeal the unsealing of the Yankees' letter. MLB, the Yankees, and plaintiffs said they have no comment. Reasonable to expect the Yankees, MLB, their counsel, will use some of this time to decide whether it's worth appealing. Here's what I don't know what's in the letter. I don't. And we all know the phone thing that the Yankees were accused of and the Red Sox with the Apple Watch and then what the Astros were found guilty of. There better not be a smoking gun in there, because then all the outrage by the Yankees about what the Astros did, if they were doing something and that's in that letter, it makes people look really bad. Now, supposedly the only thing in there is that they said, you're using the computer or the phone improperly, like the Red Sox used the Apple Watch improperly. But if there's something in there, the Yankees certainly have fought this to make the letter public. If it comes out that it's something more than is being said, well, all these players that were outraged and still, there was arguing about whether you want Carlos Correa here because he was on that 2017 right. team. That really makes you look sketchy if in fact, there's something in there that we don't know.
But why was this being protected? Why weren't they fined or levied any kind of punishment like
they were,
everybody
they
else.
They were punished. They were punished, but I guess people are assuming that in the letter, Manfred said that there's more, but he gave the Yankees a slap on the wrist. But I don't know if that's the case. We don't know what's in the letter.
Now, when this letter is made public, I mean, is it something that Manfred can survive? If he lied about what was done and then there's something different in the letter, what kind of position does that put him in?
It wouldn't be a good look for anybody. And we'll see if they continue to appeal, but you know, the more you fight it, the more you wonder, well, what's in that letter? What's in that letter? And I'm sure Astro fans are rooting that letter gets opened up and that the Yankees, you know, are guilty of something that doesn't make the Astros look as bad as they look.
But you don't want something to where Manfred was protecting the Yankees.
Right.
I mean, that's almost a fireable offense.
This is from the 2015 team. This is a 2015 Yankee team.
Mm-hmm. And what was that? They made the playoffs that year. 16 they didn't.
Then
17
they
went to
the
league championship series. So
right.
That was the year after Jeter, right?
15. Well, Jeter got into the Hall of Fame. Well, Jeter's last year 14. Yeah, I think that was the first year of DD.
It's such an annoying story, too, because, like, you have to give it its proper due and time, and you want to find the information. But at the same time, I feel like it never, like, looks great for the Yankees anyway. It kind of sucks that that's how things are in sports. But, like, even if you are the victim of people doing something unscrupulous, you still end up looking like a little bit of a crybaby when you actually properly complain about it.
And in 2015, ironically, after the Astros knocked the Yankees out, I think that was Dallas Keuchel shutting them out in a one-game wild card.
Right.
You know, I did the game today with Cameron Maben, and Cameron was on that 2017 World Series team, the one that, you know, was found guilty of cheating. And he came late August, and he admitted, he said, yeah. He said, they kept things from me for a week to see if they could trust me. He said, but they were banging trash cans. But then he added something I thought was really interesting. He said, let me tell you, a lot of teams do stuff like this. He said, I've been on a lot of teams. He said, everybody's looking for an edge. He told me a story off the air that he said, there's a team in the American League. He said, there was a guy that would sit in the right field bleachers. He was just stealing signs for one player. It was an old guy. And he would sit there with binoculars in the right center field bleachers, and the player could see him. And he wore a hat and had binoculars, like older people sometimes bring binoculars to games. And he would get the sign from a catcher. And he would be reading a white sheet of paper. And if he put the sheet of paper down, it was a breaking ball. If he kept it up, it was a fastball. So, I mean, everybody's always trying to get an edge. And he said, you know, he admitted, the Astros had the camera and then the video feed. He said at the time, he said, I didn't think it was that big a deal. He said, I certainly was new to the team. I didn't want to be a snitch and say, you know, you guys can't do this. He said, but I really believe a lot of teams really push the envelope. And that's from a guy that was there. But the only team that's been caught and the only team that admitted doing something wrong is the Astros. And remember, in 2015, the rules were kind of cloudy. In 2017, they weren't. That's what annoyed Manfred the most, that they went up against the fact that after the Red Sox Apple Watch thing, he put in specific rules, you cannot do this, and the Astros did it. So we'll see what's in the letter in 2 weeks. And I thought it was interesting what Maben said as well. And these are questions that we'll ask Carlos Beltran, too. When he joins us in the booth as well. He was part of that, not just part of it. It seemed like he was one of the player leaders with the trash-banging situation. So it's interesting. It's disheartening, but it's interesting. 1-800-919-3776 is the number, but don't call right now because Peter's all set for Ian, and that's coming up in just a moment right here on Yes, 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.